Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. It's great to have you listening today. Well, parents, have you ever wondered what makes your son tick? Why he does the things that he does? I sure do. Well, in the teenage years in particularly are a time of incredible growth and change and maybe some frustration on the parent side. Well, my guests for today say that the teenage years are also an incredible opportunity to shape and develop your son's character. I know that I've found that to be true. In fact, just as I was prepping for the show this morning, reading about how to shape my son's character, I realized that he hadn't put away the clothes I'd washed for him about a week ago, and so I dumped them out on top of his unmade bed. Do you think that that was a wise thing to do?
Big surprise. If it's effective, I think I'm all for it, you know? Was it effective?
I don't know. We'll see when he gets home from school and wonders why in the world his clean clothes are now dumped all over his bed. I'm going to have to ask our guests for today whether or not that was a wise character-building move of a mom, or if I should have done something else.
I can't wait to hear the response.
Right. I can't either. Well, Rick Johnson is my guest today. He's the best-selling author of That's My Son, That's My Teenage Son, That's My Girl, and Becoming Your Spouse's Better Half. We had him on the show for that book last time, and today we're going to talk a little bit about parenting and building character of our sons. Rick is the founder of Better Dads and is a sought-after speaker at parenting and marriage conferences. And Rick and his wife Suzanne and their grown children live in Oregon. Well, you can listen more about Rick or learn more about Rick at betterdads.net. We'll have a link to that on our website as well. Rick, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Hi, Joe. Good to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to talk to you as well. I was just telling Ted that what I did this morning while I was prepping for your show is I was a little frustrated because I realized that my son, my teenage son, had not put away the clothes that I'd washed and folded for him that have been sitting there for about a week. So I dumped them on his unmade bed. Do you think that that was a wise parenting move?
Well, he'll probably be sleeping with them for the next week or so.
I wondered that, too. I thought, well, maybe he'll just go to sleep on those clothes and he'll just pick them off as he needs them. I found that sometimes my teenage son does things that I think are strange. Is that common?
Yeah, I think that's very common. I think moms are continually surprised by the things that their boys do or don't do.
Well, And I don't mean to sound like boys are the only culprits. In fact, my parents have told my two boys stories about me as a child as well, in my room in particular, that there was never a spot where they could actually see the carpet. So I know that part of that's boy and part of that's just teenager, isn't it?
I think so. And I think there's some strategies that you can use. But for the most part, I think that's pretty normal.
Well, Rick, I so enjoyed just reading your book, That's My Son, How Moms Can Influence Boys to Become Men of Character. And I am right in the throes of that with a 12 and 15-year-old. You write just so eloquently and kind of encourage us to make sure that we get in there. A lot of my friends, when they have teenagers, kind of back off thinking that we've done what we can now and maybe they should be on their own even at 13, 14, or 15 years old. Is that true or should we dispel that?
Well, I think that's a myth that our culture kind of perpetuates on us, but I think it's absolutely untrue. You know, we have a tendency to think that once our kids are teenagers that their peers, rock stars, movie stars, have a lot more influence on them than their parents. But there's an interesting study done by MTV a number of years ago where they surveyed 40,000 young people from ages 14 to 24, and they asked them, what was most important to them in life? And the number one answer by far was having a relationship with their parents. And, we have this huge influence on our kids, but if we back off, if we don't use it, we tend to lose it. And then the other influences in culture, in our culture, do tend to be more influential in our lives than we are.
It does seem like the more contact I have with my kids, then the more they want to have contact with me and might ask my advice. And if I were just to not press in, maybe they wouldn't feel that way.
I think so. You know, especially teenage boys, it's, well, girls too. It's hard to get them to talk sometimes. And, again, I think we lay that foundation early in life when they're kids by having open communication with them and not overreacting when they tell us stuff, understanding the different stages that they're going through so that we can know what to expect. But also to find opportunities. You know, one of the things with boys and moms about communicating, moms complain that boys don't talk, but I think what moms need to know is that boys process information differently than females do. And so a lot of times for males, it's much easier to process information than to talk about things when we're doing physical activities. So I encourage moms to, you know, go out and shoot hoops with their son, or, you know, at least catch the ball and throw it back to him, or go for a hike. Or, you know, the best time of the day for me is when my wife and I in the evening go for a walk together. I don't have that sitting across the table eye to eye from somebody who's so much more skilled at something like verbal communication than I am. And being able to move allows me to process information, especially emotional things, a lot easier. And so we have some great talks just going out and taking a walk together.
I have found that to be true about my teenage boys as well, that if I'm not looking straight at them, we're going to have a better conversation. So either a room that's dark, or maybe driving in the car, or like you said, doing something, golfing or shooting hoops or fishing or whatever it is that we're doing. If he doesn't have to look directly at me, we have better conversations.
Right. Well, you know, there's and I'm lost for the technical term for it. There's actually a term where if a male looks into the eyes, directly into the eyes of a female for more than like 2 seconds, his brain kind of like automatically shuts off. And it's true. I mean, I've experimented with it myself. I get, you know, if I'm staring into the eyes of my wife trying to talk to her, after a couple of seconds, I get frustrated and lose my train of thought. And, you know, I see, it's kind of funny because I see these female teachers of like elementary school boys, and they're looking at these boys and they're saying, they want to talk to them, and they're saying, look at me. You know, look at me. It's like you're totally missing the point that if they have to sit and stare at you, they're not going to understand what it is that you're trying to get your point across to them.
So some more effective ways to communicate with our boys might be to not be looking at them. Or you say the importance of a soundbite is really important, that even in using our words, we need to use them in smaller quantities.
Yeah, I talk to moms all the time about, you know, using soundbite type sentences. And the reason is not because males are stupid. It's just because it takes us longer to process information than it does females. And from a male's perspective, I think a lot of times females seem to talk in riddles. You know, hear women talk around a subject without seeming to get to the point, and that can be kind of confusing to us. So as an example, my wife and I are driving down the highway one day, and it's a beautiful sunny day, and we go through this little bitty town, and my wife says, "That's an interesting-looking antique store." And I said, "Yep." And we keep driving, and probably 10 minutes later, I noticed that the temperature in the car had gotten a lot cooler. And I said, "Are you mad at me? You know, why are you mad at me?" And she said, "Because you didn't stop at that antique store like I asked you to." First of all, I'm thinking, what antique store, right? Because it's been like 5 minutes now. And the other thing is I'm thinking, you know, is that true? Because I would do whatever my wife asked me to do if I knew what it was that she wanted. And so I think a lot of times women need to understand that they need to get to the point, not talk around a subject, speak in more soundbite-type sentences. And again, if you need to talk longer about a subject, you can find a physical activity to do together. You know, one of the greatest gifts that my wife ever gave me and our son was to let us know when she was changing subjects during a conversation. She'll say, "New topic." And it's like, wow, because here's the thing. You know, my wife during a conversation might talk about 6 or 7 different things at a time. And I'm still kind of focusing on the first thing that we're talking about. Hopefully she'll come around again to that, and I'll be up to speed at that point, but I've kind of missed all the rest of that. And heaven forbid that she talks about, you know, 2 different people with the same name, then I'm kind of totally confused about the whole thing.
I like that we can laugh about it. I also loved you wrote about how sometimes – sometimes women, I'm going to speak in general terms because I seem to feel short on this one, but that women will say, I don't care where we go out on a date or out to eat. And they really do care, but they're trying to be accommodating. And so they don't say, and then you have to kind of guess what it is. And I've found that boys can be the same way. If I don't tell my son exactly what I'm thinking or what I'm asking him to do, like, I need you to take out the garbage right now, then he's not going to know what I mean unless I'm more direct about it. Is that something we have to work on? Well, he's going to do it
the way he thinks it should be done. Doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. It just means it's different than the way that you want it done. But absolutely, you have to be very succinct, very direct, almost blunt, I think, in your conversations a lot of times. And one of the things that we find, I found over the years with the volunteers that work at our workshops that we do for single moms raising boys, is something that boys respond really well to. For instance, if our volunteers, if a boy is doing something he's not supposed to do, our volunteers will say something like, you know, don't do that. And, of course, the boy will say, why? And they will say something to the effect of, because that's not how a man acts. Now, boys are very interested, especially boys without dads, are very interested in how a man acts and what he does and things like that. And they're very eager to learn that. The problem is they don't have a lot of resources to be able to teach them that kind of stuff. So, you know, those types of strategies, mom saying things like, oh, gosh, I'm so proud that you did that. That's the way I think a man should act. You know, those are very encouraging to a boy, and I think that they will try to get that response again. Same with something that you're not particularly fond of him doing. You can say something like, you know, gosh, I'm so disappointed in you. I never thought that a man acted that way. Now, he won't like that, but he'll remember that. And so, you know, you can just, again, the way you phrase some things, I think, without being destructive about it, you can help boys to understand what their roles in life are and to give them a much more noble vision of what life should be than what they might get from our culture.
Well, and our culture, as well as maybe some families even, maybe there is a father present, but maybe he's not acting in the way that a man should act. And what is the mother's role in that type of situation?
Well, and I think we have to be real careful about, you know, I tell moms, single moms, I tell dads and moms all the time, you know, it does no good to criticize the child's other parent on the way that they're acting. Our kids will eventually see that one way or another, and I think to run that person down, the one person that they love and admire generally the most in the world, are counterproductive, I think. So we have to be careful about that, but I think we can put examples in front of boys, whether that be role models, and it can even be as easy as finding role models in movies. Movies have great positive and negative role models of what manhood should be like. Sometimes in the same movie, oftentimes in the same movie, you'll find examples of that. But even looking for examples in everyday life, you know, for a mom to be able to point out and discuss with her boy and things like that, I think can be very helpful to offset that. I you know, a lot of times we believe that fathers, of course, are the most important role model in a boy's life. But it's surprising to us, we have a mentoring program for fatherless boys called Standing Tall. And we have young men in seminary who fulfill their ministry requirements, spending an hour or two a week with these fatherless boys that whose moms attend our workshops. And it's amazing to me the influence that just that little bit of time can have in a boy's life. You know, we see amazing results and changes in these boys' lives just from that little bit of time that those men spend with them.
It's wonderful to hear. In fact, I want to talk a little bit more about your work with single moms in particular and how you encourage them that they are actually just a huge influencer in the lives of their boys. We're going to talk more with Rick Johnson when we return. He's written a book and several books. Today we're talking about That's My Son, How Moms Can Influence Boys to Become Men of Character. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
I pray that God would fill your
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender and talking today with Rick Johnson. His book is called That's My Son, How Moms Can Influence Boys to Become Men of Character. If you're listening today and you are a mom or want to get this book in the hands of a mom, you can give us a call. We do have a few to give away, and call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Carissa is there to answer your call. She'll get your name in a drawing for, at the end of the show. Well, Rick, one of the things that you write about for moms is that sometimes without a dad present, or maybe a single mom as well, may struggle with discipline and giving consequences and accountability to their sons. How can moms assist in developing character through discipline and holding our boys accountable?
Yeah, you know, I think boys need accountability. Otherwise, they have this tendency to follow their own selfish and self-indulgent, you know, inclinations, which are pretty destructive to boys and to members of the family. And boys need structure, supervision. They need to be civilized. You know, I think one of the things moms can do is allow other men to hold boys accountable. I tell a story in the book about what I see happening a lot with coaches, coaching, particularly high school coaches. I seem to see this happening more often. You know, typically what will happen is a coach will, you know, a coach's job is to not only teach sports skills to players, but also to teach life skills. And I think one of the things like discipline, self-respect, you know, respect, discipline, things like that. And one of the ways that coaches do that is through a series of disciplinary measures. If somebody's not acting, if somebody's acting out or not practicing like they're supposed to or whatever, they can do a number of things. They typically will do things like pull them aside and talk to them, reprimand them in front of their peers, make them do physical things like push-ups or running laps, and finally, as a result, if none of that works, they'll take away their playing time. So, you know, here's what I'm seeing is a little Johnny on the high school football team. He's messing around, not practicing, not doing what he's supposed to do, and coach does all those things and finally benches him, says he'll get his position back when he straightens up. Well, little Johnny, of course, runs home to mom and complains that the mean old coach is picking on him. And I don't seem to hear about dad in these, so I don't know if he's absent or uninvolved or whatever. But mom, of course, you know, little Johnny's an angel. So she doesn't go to the coach and talk to him. She doesn't go to the athletic director or the principal. She goes to the school superintendent and complains, and the coach ends up getting fired, generally without telling his side of the story. And I think when we do things like that, when moms run too quickly to rescue their sons when things get tough, they teach them that the way out of hard times is to find someone, a woman, to get them off the hook rather than to be accountable. And that sets up patterns in place throughout lives. Boys who avoid accountability become men who are answerable to no one, which is a recipe for disaster. That said, I think boys have a natural tendency to challenge authority. It's part of developing leadership skills that they'll need later on in life, but they need to learn when it's appropriate to follow. And I think sometimes moms especially need to lead their families with authority. Oftentimes women don't have that assumed position of authority that fathers do in the family, or instill that innate fear factor that fathers seem to possess. So one of the things I tell moms is that, have you ever noticed how big high school football players are today? I mean, they're huge. I don't know what – I played high school football, and these guys are huge now. The next time you see a – watch a practice, watch what the coaches do. Coaches are always shorter than the players. And what they'll do is they'll make the team take a knee when they want to talk to them. And that's so that boys aren't – so that they're not looking up – the coaches aren't looking up to the boys in a subservient position. So tell moms, if you have a 6'2", 13-year-old son – you know, have him take a knee or sit when you want to talk to him so you're eye level instead of being in a subservient position. I also would say, especially for single moms, to lead with authority. Don't be overly permissive due to guilt. You know, punish when it's needed. Hug them when they need to. You know, don't be guilty. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad, you know. I tell moms all the time, look, if you make a mistake, you apologize, you ask for forgiveness, and you move on. And you tell your kids, look, you know, I've never done this before, okay? This is the first time I've done this. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm sorry. And then let it go. I think too many moms carry guilt around. And then be calm. I think screaming leads to a lack of credibility. But I also think a little unpredictability in a woman is very scary to a male. So when my huge son would scurry by and whisper with a tremor in his voice, "Mom's crazy," we both instinctively know what he's talking about. You know, mom's on the warpath, and we both know it's time to find someplace to hide for a while until the storm passes. Now, he might be a foot taller and 100 pounds heavier than his mom, but he's convinced she's capable of doing about anything, and that keeps him in line.
I did just say my 15-year-old just stood in front of me and said, "Mom, I'm finally bigger than you." And I said, "Yes, it's hard to believe that you've been so scared of me all these years." And he laughed, "Oh, I'm still scared of you." And I thought, well, maybe that's good. I don't know if that's good or not. But that size difference sure does become a factor when our children become teens. And I'm grateful to know that there are some ways that we can eliminate that. And the sitting down is a really good way to do that. And, yeah. And something I think dads certainly have an advantage over.
Well, and we see a lot of teen boys get to a stage where they start challenging mom's authority. You know, they get a little bit bigger. They get some testosterone flowing through them. And sometimes that's the time that dad does need to step in. In fact, with a lot of single moms, we'll see that that's the stage in life where the boy needs to go live with his dad for a while. In fact, we see it in cultures around the world that at that age is when the young males go spend time with the other males instead of being in the home with the mom all the time.
Well, I know we've been talking a lot about really how moms can influence their boys, but dads have a great influence over their boys as well, especially as they get into these teenage years, on how to treat a woman. Is that true?
Absolutely. You know, dads role model many, many things for boys, but one of the things that is most important maybe is they model how to treat a woman, how much respect a woman deserves, how to love a woman. You know, those are things they think that males don't intuitively know and understand, maybe like females do. And so without that role model, we see, I mean, and because I'm conscious of this, and I also have a daughter that's not married yet, I'm very aware of this, but you can literally see the difference in the way that a boy who was raised without a father or positive male role models in his life acts in relationships and treats the women in his life versus how a boy who was raised by a father that respected and loved the women in his life. You literally can see the difference. And it's unfortunate that a lot of times young women don't think about those kinds of things before they enter into relationships. But that's absolutely something that a dad should, if nothing else, by the example that he sets, teach his sons.
Well, we're going to talk a little more about that when we return from our break with Rick Johnson, his book, That's My Son. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Was a little boy. The devil called my name
when I was just a boy.
I say now, who do you think you're fooling?
When I was just a boy,
I'm a consecrated boy.
When I was just a boy,
singer in Sunday choir.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Today I'm talking with author Rick Johnson. He's written a book called That's My Son, How Moms Can Influence Boys to Become Men of Character. Rick, one of the things you write about is just this innate need of boys to kind of be physical, to be running and jumping and doing things that are dangerous to themselves and others, and that's just part of who they are, and that maybe our role as moms is not necessarily to stop that from happening. Talk more about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think is really important is for moms to understand some of the pitfalls that women might fall into. Not all moms. Again, we're talking in generalities here, but I think, you know, and I labeled several things that I'll talk about and then break them down a little bit. But the first thing is not letting boys take risks and get hurt. Second thing would be, you know, smothering and dominating. And the third thing is allowing them to quit too easily. So So the first thing is not allowing boys to take risks and get hurt. You know, I think when girls do something and get hurt, they learn from it. I think when boys get hurt, they just consider it to be bad luck. And I think moms, because of their nurturing tendencies, are often overprotective of their children, because it's kind of mom's job, you know, to civilize a boy. And without a man's influence in this area, I think boys can end up failing to learn that valuable link between taking risks and attaining success in life. And getting hurt physically, failing, persevering, and succeeding despite overwhelming odds are key factors in a male's growth towards manhood. We see it a lot with single moms. Like, maybe we'll have a pool party or something like that, and one of these boys will fall and skin his knee, and he'll immediately cry for mom, and virtually every single mom there's initial instinct is to leap up and rush over and help this boy. And if we can keep them calmed down and have the mentor walk up and pick him up and dust him off and make sure he's okay, then he's fine. But if he can milk it and get mom to come over and coddle him and you know, feed him goodies and all sorts of stuff, then that's what he's going to do. And so, but again, taking risks is part of growing up to be a man and succeeding. And your son needs to learn from the trial and error of his failures. So that's important. Smothering and dominating, I think boys with overly attached mothers and no male role model can react in one of two ways. They either become hostile towards women or they become feminized. Now, that's not effeminate. That's feminized, which is a completely different thing. And I think some moms, in an effort to fill the void created by the lack of male leadership in the home, either become dominating or smother boys with mother love. And adolescent-aged and older males caught in these situations often rebel in one of two ways. They either become angry and seek to dominate women, or they become feminized. Robert Lewis has this excellent tape series called A Journey into Authentic Manhood, and he talks about what happens to boys that are raised in an all-woman world. And several of the sessions discuss what Lewis calls the overly bonded with mother wound. And he describes this as an unhealthy emotional bond between a mother and son, not purposefully inflicted. Okay, we need to understand mom's not trying to do anything wrong. That stunts or inhibits a healthy masculinity. And this happens when a well-intentioned mom, seeing the vacuum left in her son's life by an absent father, and again, don't have to be physically absent for kids to be fatherless, she rushes in to save the day, and in her desire to rescue her son, mom goes too far. And in these instances, she bonds too deeply, becoming emotionally over-involved, and inadvertently recast her son's sexual identity. So boys raised mainly under the supervision of women, mom at home, female teachers, female Sunday school teachers, female Cub Scout leaders, often experience insecurity over their identity as men. And so boys raised under these circumstances often react in one of two ways. They might identify with, the first one is they might identify with women and become feminized, not effeminate. The feminized man can be a football star, race car driver, on the outside a real man's man, but inside he's developed traits more typically associated with the female gender, such as passivity, indecisiveness, tends to identify with the overabundance of female mentors who are authority figures in his life, tends to be passive in social relationships. Have you noticed that young men today want girls and women to call them, mm-hmm. to drive them? They don't make decisions. They don't take risks or initiate anything. They're happy to sit back and let women come to them to serve them. Don't even make a decision about a permanent relationship. And one of the unfortunate traits about a feminized man is that when he looks for a mate, he marries someone like mom, usually a strong woman who'll make decisions and take care of him. Of course, his wife thinks this is great at first. You know, she's marrying a sensitive man with feelings. But she soon becomes very frustrated having to make all the decisions, and the more she pushes him, the more passive he becomes, and the more passive and indecisive he becomes, the more frustrated she gets, until eventually she loses respect for him. And lastly, quitting. I think a lot of times moms, especially single moms, allow boys to quit too easily. And boys need to learn perseverance in the face of adversity in order to succeed in life. One of the problems with boys that are allowed to quit or are rescued too often by mom as boys is that that becomes a lifelong habit. Quitting becomes a lifelong habit. And so boys that learn to quit become men who quit. here's the problem. Some of the best things in life are the hardest things in life. How difficult is marriage? Marriage might be the hardest thing there is. What happens to boys who have learned to quit when they become men and marriage gets tough? They leave, they quit. Raising kids is very difficult. Men who have learned to quit, first time parenting becomes difficult. Working at a job you hate to feed your family. Again, men that have learned to quit tend to quit in those situations, whether it's good for them or for their family, either one. So I think those things are things that moms need to be aware of, just so that they don't inadvertently cause problems. We see these boys who don't have dads who have some problems in areas that are going to affect them later in life if they don't learn how to address them. Things like taking risks and things like that. Very adverse to take risks, so very harmful for them as well.
You know, the whole conversation about someone having either masculine traits or feminine traits seems to be kind of a contentious subject in society today. So how can we, as committed parents, how can we have these conversations without seeming like we're getting into the throes of that contentious conversation?
Yeah, well, and I think the truth is the truth, and I think, you know, certainly these are generalizations that I'm talking about. Not all women think this way, not all males think that way, and in fact, probably 20%. I think it's about 80-20, about 20% females would not be what you might consider stereotypical female thought process. Same with males, 20% much more sensitive than you might think that the average male might be, so... You know, I think we approach these things as knowledge and adapt them to the situation. You know, each of your kids are going to be different, boys and girls, and they're going to have different traits. They're going to have different personalities. And part of our job as a parent is to learn and understand about our kids so that we can take and adjust some of these. The thing that I found helpful in parenting is to know ahead of time maybe what was going to happen and be prepared, because If I could be proactive in parenting, I tended to be a lot better parent than if I reacted. If I reacted to situations, I tended to react in anger, and I don't think that's good for me or for our kids. So again, this is just information that people can take and utilize the most effective way in their children's lives without necessarily adhering to these firm and fast rules and regulations.
You know, a lot of the, you do have some just great tips on really how to help our boys to become more responsible. And doing chores, for example, is something that you highly recommend. We don't really do our sons any favors by picking up after them, do we?
You mean like folding their laundry?
Yeah, you should just throw it on their bed and let them deal with it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that how effective that would be.
I don't know. It's the first time I've ever done it.
I think he would have just slept on them for forever. But you know what? If you tied it in with food somehow,
I was thinking about that too.
Do what you want him to do, right?
Yes, you cannot eat until you've put away all your clothes. I think that's my next adventure.
That would work. Something like that, yeah. Boy, teenage boys, food's real important.
It's true. Food is important, and I think we have tied that a little bit to they need to get done what they need to get done before breakfast or before dinner, and then it does get done. Maybe not, like you said, in the way that either my husband and I would do it, but the more specific we are about what we need done, the better it's going to get done.
Yeah. You know, I'm just a firm believer, and we probably weren't as good about this with our kids. As you practice what you preach, right? But I've become a big fan of accountability, and that you know, our kids need to be accountable for their actions. That just serves them so well in life, and I think it just teaches so many life lessons all the time. That if we can adhere to that, now it's a lot more work, especially when they're young, as parents to try to do that, but it's very effective. I look at some of the love and logic strategies for parenting, I think are just very effective and very helpful.
It's hard to know what to do all the time, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, we adopted our 4-year-old granddaughter, and we're going through the whole process again. And you'd think I'd be really smart after writing books and raising kids once already. It's like, man, either I forgot a lot of stuff, or this is really hard. Even knowing what I know, you know. So
it's probably harder knowing what you know, because you know the way that it can be effective and can work. And then if someone throws a wrench in that, then it's probably difficult to say, wait a minute, you have to rewrite that whole chapter.
Yeah, thankfully I have my wife to come along and tell me what I'm doing wrong.
Oh, so. I'm so glad you have her, too. You tell her I said that. Well,
yeah.
We only have a small amount of time left, but you write a really good chapter about how we can teach our boys, and then you just list a number of character traits. And one of the ones I love to read about is manners and humility, because I feel like if I can send my boy away having good manners with other people, treating people well, and then being humble about what he can do well, I feel like I've done at least a little bit of a good job. Can you talk a little bit about how we can teach our teenagers especially to be humble, or at least exude a bit of humility as they go through life?
Yeah, I think manners are one way that we teach humility. I think manners are huge. I think if we don't teach our boys anything else, manners is something that'll serve them very well throughout life, because people like people with manners. And I think it opens doors in relationships, in professional arenas and things like that, that might, and quite frankly, I think that's something that's missing a lot in our culture today, is that young people don't have a lot of manners. So, but humility, you know, young men especially are filled with pride. I know I was as a young man, but I think humility is what allows men to achieve great things for a higher purpose than themselves, and that includes putting their family's well-being ahead of their own. Mm-hmm. But part of the problem, I think, in our culture today is that humility's gotten this bad rap. You know, it's defined as this, you know, kind of a wuss thing. Mm-hmm. But the dictionary defines humble as, one, not haughty or proud, two, not pretentious, unassuming, and three, modest. And those are all pretty good traits. And I would say that some of the happiest, wisest, and most successful men I know are extremely humble individuals. And so, you know, I think one of the ways that we teach our boys is again, allowing them to be accountable for the consequences of the choices and decisions that they make. That tends to humble us pretty quickly in a lot of situations. It does me anyway. And for boys to understand that for the rest of their lives, every decision they make is going to have a consequence. Every choice they make is going to have a consequence. And they need to be aware of that and understand that they don't make choices or decisions lightly. And so I think those are some ways to help kids to become humble without breaking their spirit, so to speak.
Hmm. Well, it is difficult to watch them have to experience the consequences of their decision, but it's important, isn't it?
It's very, and it is hard. It's hard for me, and I write about this stuff. I talk about this stuff all the time, right?
Yes. Well, Rick, I just thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about your book, That's My Son, How Moms Can Influence Boys to Become Men of Character. And Rick has a number of other very helpful books. Like I said, we've talked about Becoming Your Spouse's Better Half, and he also writes about parenting both boys and girls. You can catch more about Rick on betterdads.net. Rick, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Joe. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, too. And if you've been listening along, you want to get a book of Rick's in your hands, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
We were made to be courageous.
Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we're talking about mothers and sons, specifically how moms can influence their boys to become men of character. Well, I had an opportunity a bit ago to speak with Dr. Emerson Eggerich on his book, Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. Listen in.
You can find the virtue in the vice. Always look for the virtue and the vice and speak to the virtue while you then confront the vice, and make sure you distinguish his persona from his behavior, that he's not what he just did. And when you then speak to that, and that's what great leaders do toward other men. How is it that a three-star general motivates men in the next half hour to give their very lives in a battle? It's because they believe in those men, and it's about honor, and it's about duty. This is something that is very powerful within the male. And when you appeal to that, when you speak to that, you can confront that individual all day long on behavior that's not in keeping with who you believe that person to be. Mm-hmm. This isn't rocket science, but we've missed how to do that, because when we're upset, we feel that we kind of have a license to just let it go, because if we speak it, then this is going to guarantee that whatever it is that he was going to do, it isn't going to happen. And so sometimes even mothers say, I don't care how contemptuous I am. I'm protecting this boy from killing himself, and I'm going to say it any way I want. Well, I just say you don't need to. You don't need to. You can get the point across in a respectful way, and truth will always carry its own weight. We don't have to be contemptuous to motivate a person to be respectful and loving. That's why this is a message that must not lead to shame in mothers. It's, as my wife said, it's always a new day. Particularly with boys, it's a new day. But it doesn't mean that we can ignore this either. And again, if we think through what this book is saying, it's using these situations to meet a need in the boy. Because here's what happens. The mother wrote, if my son does something that is not worthy of respect, I can quickly fall into this trap of disappointment and even disdain. There's the word. Disdain. That's disrespect on steroids. It then gives me a feeling of, oh, he might never change. Then I feel like a bad mom, because I feel indirectly that his behavior is somehow my fault or reflects on me. After this, I probably give off this attitude of disappointment, and I know only too well that my son can tell. The very hardest thing then is to see your son defeated and down. As mothers, she said, we practice and look for ways to love. But maybe more importantly, we should be looking for opportunities and ways to respect our sons.
Dr. Eggerich, we're just trying to talk about these mothers who maybe feel like, well, they might have missed the boat. Maybe they've kind of messed up a little bit. And you keep saying not to feel shame of this, but take some action on how you can make maybe your relationship grow by talking to your son in a very different way. You said you have some examples of mothers who've tried this in various stages. What has been the result of those?
Well, and that's an excellent point. And we are not saying stop saying, I love you, love, 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 lovely. You keep, that's who you are. Keep doing that. But periodically think not just about what you feel toward your boy, but ask yourself, what does your boy feel in his own heart about how you feel about him truly in the area of the respect grid, and introduce a few vocabulary words. Back to the testimonies of mothers, one of the things that was interesting is in our conference, you know, we talk about a husband's need for respect, and Sarah, my wife, said, you know, you need to bring up sons relatively quick, because, you know, women say, well, Dr. Emerson, you know, I don't feel respect for my husband. It'd be hypocritical for me to show respect when I don't feel it. I know you don't want me to be a hypocrite. You know, he hasn't earned the respect. He doesn't deserve it. He's not superior to me. That's the dictionary definition of respect. You show respect to your superiors. I'm not inferior to him. I'm not going to be treated like a doormat. I certainly am not going to, you know, give him license to do what he wants to do. I'm not going to come in as a cheerleader and pom-poms and just, you know, say, go ahead and do whatever you want for me to show you that I respect you. I certainly am not going to lose a sense of my identity and self and set the feminist team back. I think you really want us to return to male patriarchy and fear male dominance, but I'm certainly not going to do that, and I'm not going to subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, Dr. Emerson, I'm really open to hearing what you have to say about this. Well, the crowd goes crazy, and then Sarah said, ask them, how many of them have sons? And, of course, almost everybody raises their hands, and I say, what I just went through, that mantra, is what your sweet daughter-in-law, who's going to be a loving, nurturing individual, the epitome of sweetness, but that's going to be her attitude, and that's going to be her message toward your precious baby boy. And he's just going to shut down. He's just going to close off. Well, what was interesting, this just really impacts, you know, women have an attitude toward their husband that's different than their attitude toward their boys, and they were very engaged with that and suddenly realized, whoa, and not only do I want my daughter-in-law to treat my boy with respect, but you know what? I don't know if I'm actually doing that toward my boy. And what they did is they went back and started applying this, and it was revolutionary. And Joe, we began to get emails, hundreds of emails. And this book is written around mothers who wrote me. This isn't about me telling mothers what to do. This book was mothers telling me what they did and the powerful impact and the sense of connection. Now, it's not a formula. Just as a daughter, you know, you can love your daughter as a father, and she's still going to have a meltdown because the boys' school said she didn't like her. And no matter what you do, she's upset. You know, don't see this as a manipulation, but a motivation over a marathon, not just a sprint to get your boy to make his bed today because you've got company coming tonight. This is not about you. This is about meeting his need. Well, anyway, these mothers began to write me, and there were incredible stories. For instance, one woman said, and this is important, this is not just for young boys. This is something that works with adult sons. She said, my relationship with my 22-year-old son improved overnight. Who knew that simple changes in words, the respect words, could make such a difference? Now I tell him how much I appreciate him and respect him, and he tears up. Wow, tears up. Before, I told him I loved him and got back, I know, Mom, I love you too. Then she said this, learning the right words to get my feelings across in a way they can be assimilated was so easy. Now, I'm not saying that all boys, you know, just want to hear respect or appreciated or I'm proud of you. There are many boys who want to hear that they are loved, particularly if the family has been in upheaval. So again, this is not an absolute, but this is so overwhelmingly true for most boys. Same thing, that a girl wants to hear from her father that she is loved, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't want to hear that she's respected. Mm-hmm. But here's a mother of a 11-year-old, I believe he was. She said, when my son gives me his insight, I say, I really respect what you have to say, or I respect the way you handle that situation, or I really respect how you are taking initiative to get things done and follow through with. She then said, these things have made my son smile like I have never seen. Mm-hmm. I talk more about respect with regard to sporting events and showing respect for other opponents. My son knows without a doubt that I love him. Now I feel he knows that I value him and value his ideas, which I may not have done so well in the past. Here's another. She said, when I began the respect principles, he seemed calmer, less frustrated. This boy was, I think, 7 years old, less internally agitated. My respect seemed to release his internal tension. He has been coming up to me, and instead of acting out for attention, he will hug me, look right into my eyes, smile the sweetest, happiest smile, and say, you're the best mom in the world. Mm. Wow. Nothing quite that wonderful has ever happened between us before. Being respectful to him has triggered his affection for me. And she said, I'm seeing beautiful and meaningful results. And then she said, it's like a little miracle. The connection and affection I long to have with my son has finally come. It is clearly the male soul. It is what is in the man, just as the expressions of love warm and energize the female. And again, there's crossover. We all need love and respect. Don't get me wrong here. But the leaning is so dominant in the male and female that if we miss it, we're going to miss something precious. And when we get it and we begin to do what these mothers did, something most magnificent begins to happen.
Well, just giving you something to think about today. If you're a mom and you have a son, you probably have lots to think about after today. I know that I do. But you can find out more about Emerson Eggerich on our website at myfaithradio.com or Rick Johnson, who we spoke to for the first half of the program. You can also listen to a podcast of our show. Just go to Connecting Faith and you'll be able to see a podcast of all of our shows here at Faith Radio on our website as well. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, You can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.